He's the man without fear, but you do not have to fear, as we have the best Daredevil stories that you will want to read, because your Geek History lesson on the best Daredevil stories is now in session. Hello and welcome to Geek History Lesson. I am Jason Bear Without Fear Inman.
I am Ashley Victoria Robinson. Welcome to the Mind University, because you have stumbled onto the podcast where we take one character, construct, or blind hero from popular culture and teach you everything you need to know about them in about an hour. Except this week. What are we doing this week, Jason?
Well, this week, Ashley, we are stumbling around in the dark using our radar sense to take down ninjas, because the one place in the world where we know all kinds of secret ninjas exist... New York City. Hell's Kitchen specifically. This little kind of like 6-block area in New York.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's
right by the Javits Center.
Yeah, right by the Javits Center with some really good diners. No, we're talking about the best Daredevil stories ever, because Daredevil Season 3 is on Netflix. It's getting all kinds of rave reviews. It stars the wonderful Charlie Cox and Vincent D'Onofrio as the Kingpin. And also, I love me some Daredevil.
Yeah.
Also, we have done a Daredevil full lesson before.
Which is where the Bear Without Fear
Bear Without
joke
Fear. We still
came.
Get that hashtag
yeah,
on Twitter, which I love, when people discover the episode back in the past. But I don't remember what episode number it is, but if you're looking for a full lesson on Daredevil, that's where you can go. Go Google. Use Google.
We done did it.
We done did it a long time ago, because we weren't very far into this podcast before I was like,
I think
I
we
have to
did
do
it
this.
For the first season of Daredevil.
Look, I have a couple favorite Marvel characters. Fantastic Four is number one.
Mm-hmm.
Daredevil's number two.
The Batman of the Marvel Universe.
He is the Batman of the Marvel Universe. I just love Daredevil. So we're going to talk about the top five stories of Daredevil that we love, that we think is awesome. And to ease your way into that, we're going to do a quick 10-cent origin of Daredevil, just to remind you who this guy is real quick.
Oh, good. I hope you wrote it down, because I didn't.
I did. Ashley, what's the 10-cent origin?
The 10-cent origin is the first part of the podcast where this week Professor Jason is going to give you all the basic constructs, creators, and power sets that you need to know in case you go to a really cool Defenders-themed cocktail party and someone's like, who is Daredevil?
Now, of course, Daredevil is a Marvel Comics character. His first appearance was in Daredevil number one. Pretty simple.
Yeah, hey, imagine that.
April 1964. He was created by Stan Lee and Bill Everett. His full name is Matthew Michael Murdoch. He's an MMM.
That's interesting, because Stan Lee has famously stated that the characters that he likes the most are the ones he gives alliterative names to, and
yeah.
I didn't know anyone was a triple alliteration.
Yeah, his team affiliations are S.H.I.E.L.D., The Chase, Nelson and Murdoch, The Defenders, The Hand, and The New Avengers. His partnerships have been with Black Widow and Elektra. His romances have been with Black Widow and Elektra. His abilities include he has superhuman senses, including a strange radar sense. He is a skilled hand-to-hand combatant, one of the best hand-to-hand combatants in the Marvel Universe, and he loves to use a billy club.
And directly responsible for the creation of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Well, partly. Yeah, and in certain versions. Now, before we get into the main episode, we're going to talk about today's sponsor, Skillshare. It is the Netflix of learning. They're very similar to our podcast, except where we teach you about funny book, you know, fictional characters, they teach you how to do real things. So you go to their site, you check out their online learning platform with over 20,000 classes. They have categories in business, design, technology, and basically you get smarter. It's a community of Mind University of Learning. I really dig this site, like, because basically, you know, I'm not the smartest guy ever, and even if I think I am, I can still learn how to do things better. That's how humans work. And that's why going to Skillshare really helps me. Here's some of the classes they offer and I've been taking, and most of these classes are less than an hour, so they don't take much of your time, guys. You take an hour a week to learn, super friends. Some of the classes I've been looking at have been How Dead Verbs Are Killing Your Writing.
Ooh.
Passive Income, A Beginner's Guide. We could always use more income, right?
Truly.
And Get Unstuck, Beat Procrastination for Once and All. And again, these are just little videos. They kind of tell you how to do this stuff. They offer tips. It's like going to cool school.
Yeah.
So go to Skillshare.com/geekhistory and get 2 months of Skillshare for just 99 cents. That's right. Skillshare is offering Geek History Lesson listeners 2 months of unlimited access to over 20,000 classes for just 99 cents. So guys, join the millions of students already learning on Skillshare like me. I'm a student there as well. So, you know, I'm a professor on this podcast, but there I'm a student. We're equal playing field. So sign up, go to Skillshare.com/geekhistory and go start your 2 months now at Skillshare.com/geekhistory. It's a really cool site. Please go check it out. All right. Now let's go into the top five Daredevil stories.
Let's do it.
Now, these are our choices for our favorite Daredevil stories. There's not the objective list. And please send us your top five Daredevil stories on Twitter and Facebook. Ashley, where can they do that?
You can do that at Facebook.com/Geek History Lesson or on Twitter at GHL Podcast. Also, if you want to make a recommendation or a request
for top five stories,
do it in those places.
Yeah, but we're always looking for ideas of like top five stories, and we've had a lot of fun recently doing these top five stories. So anybody that, you know, wants to do more,
Robin.
We were actually talking about doing some Robins. Yeah. Okay, so Ashley, let's start us off. Real quick, how big of a Daredevil fan are you?
I would say I'm a beginner to intermediate Daredevil fan.
Okay.
I like the character, haven't done a lot of reading, did a lot of reading before this podcast.
Okay. So you discovered a lot of your favorite Daredevil stories.
He's a character that I'm interested in, but I've not done a deep dive on.
All right, cool. I am interested to hear your number five for the top five Daredevil stories.
I'm going to be honest, I also half picked these because I hope to impress you.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, you're looking. please don't feel like you ever have to do that.
No, but we talk about on this podcast when we do lists like this, we do try to include a variety of them by different authors, ones that are iconic, ones that are maybe lesser known from a variety of time periods. I didn't want everything that I did to be out of the more modern Daredevil era.
Look, I'm going to tell you, Daredevil, he's my boy. I love red, as I call
him. It's my favorite color.
Mine too. I went for the ones that I felt the most.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Okay, so my number five is from 1982.
That's so long ago.
It is for me. and it is What If number 35, What If Elektra Had Lived?
Whoa, a What If made it onto this list. That is so cool.
And I'll tell you why I picked this story, because I hate Elektra, and I'm happy that she died. And I saw this issue recommended by a lot of people, and I read it, and it was really good.
Should we explain what ifs are? I don't know if we ever have.
Sure. I would think it's pretty self-explanatory, but a what if is the same thing as an Elseworlds, which we've talked extensively about this on this podcast. Usually the way it happens at Marvel is something tragic kind of happens. The Watchers, who are these big blue guys who run the universe, show up and they're like, this is sad. Let's see what would happen if something else went down. And you get to see an alternate take on it, like usually it's like, what if the Fantastic Four never had their powers or whatever? Things like that. It's a way to explore other ideas without ruining continuity.
Tell me more about this one.
There was an ongoing What If title. I think it's great.
There used to be. In the 90s, there was. I think it got to like 100 issues.
I would also think that as a creator, it would be a really fun way to play. Mm-hmm. You know? So in What If Elektra Had Lived, as you might suspect, it begins with Matt. He's in mourning. He's very sad because Elektra Natchios has recently died. Stuck a scythe through her heart. Mm-hmm. And so they popped down with their little blue heads and their weird white hair. And they were like, what if Elektra had lived? There's always balance in stories like this. So when Elektra lives, that means that Bullseye dies when he's escaping from prison, which is an event that sort of leads up to the death of Elektra. The Kingpin puts out a hit on her because he had hired her to kill Foggy Nelson. Mm-hmm. She didn't do that in the regular continuity. She still doesn't do it in What If. So as a result, he's like, well, if you're not going to kill for me, then I'll kill you. Ha 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 ha. So her and Matt leave New York and they take on these new identities and they try to build a new secret life together.
Do they go to San Francisco?
No, they don't.
Damn it. San Francisco is another classic Daredevil town.
Yes. They try to build a new life for themselves outside of everything that brought them together, but also destroyed their lives in New York City. To me, this is kind of like, you know, at the end of The Dark Knight Returns where Alfred goes to, is it Paris? Where does he go? Somewhere in Europe. And you see that Bruce and Selina have run away together and they started this new life and they're being happy. To me, this is a similar exploration of that theme. It's the only time that I actually buy the romance between these two characters. I think Elektra is very interesting, very sweet, and very capable here. And I understand for the first time why Matt likes her. Mm-hmm. Because for me, in a lot of incarnations, I don't understand why Matt puts up with her.
She's the college girlfriend.
You're supposed to grow out of that college girlfriend. I'm sorry to all of our college girlfriends out there.
Yeah, it's
our people who have college girlfriends.
It's a college girlfriend. Person that you date in college that you super like. You know
they're a little bit bad for you.
They're a little bit bad for you, but there's a part of your brain where your brain goes, "Oh, this is the person I'm going to marry."
Yeah, and but Matt never gets over her.
Yeah,
I feel like you're kind of supposed to get it. Someone's going to tweet us and tell us they married their college spouse.
And I hate to interrupt your choice. I'm sorry.
No, please.
You know, because this is about your choice. I think more it's about Matt's life is about loss. He loses his mother. He loses his father. He loses this person. He loses stick. He loses that.
He loses electric.
So like he holds on. So when one of those people come back, he's like, no, my God. You know, it's like think of Electra as like an extension of the loss of his dad.
OK, that's fair. Mm-hmm. And that's interesting. And that's something that I had never considered before. When you bring it up like that, I can make peace with it, even if I
Marvel
don't.
Can hire me to write Daredevil at any time.
Excuse me. I can accept that even if it's still not something that's to my taste.
Totally.
Wait, look, we could just agree on something like that on the internet?
I like Elektra as a character. I don't like Elektra as a love interest to Matt.
That's fair. Also, I like seeing Matt be happy.
Yeah.
This is a story where, albeit briefly, he does get to be happy. So
do they just go become a couple? What happened? Do they shack up and knit sweaters?
They shack up together and then people come after them.
Oh, okay. Of course. Because this is Daredevil and there can't be a happy ending.
As you might suspect.
Yeah.
It's really good. It is a single issue. It is a little wordy because it's the 80s. It's Frank Miller. The art is super, super beautiful.
Is this a Frank Miller story?
Yes, it is.
Wow.
Written and penciled by Frank Miller.
Wow.
And I'm going to be honest, and I think I've said this on the podcast before, not a Frank Miller fan.
Yeah.
Really like this issue.
He doesn't, when he draws Daredevil, that's a rare thing.
Yeah. And this story is so, like, even though it is edgy and there's people dying or whatever, it's very soft for Daredevil.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to see him do that. Also, the cover's really stunning because it's in the daylight over a rooftop in New York City, and Matt and Elektra, Daredevil and Elektra are standing facing each other, kind of like they're about to get married, and they're holding their hands together, and they're both so red against this light blue sky. So I thought it was really fun.
That's great. That's a great choice. I have never read this issue.
You should. It's really great.
Oh, wow. Is it on Marvel Unlimited?
Yes, it is.
Oh, good.
Which is where I read.
I'm going to throw something out there because, again, I love Daredevil. Red's my boy.
Yeah.
I would pay all the money in the world for Frank Miller to come back and write what is his Dark Knight Returns for Daredevil.
Like Grizzly Old Matt?
Grizzly Old Matt. Now, Brian Michael Bendis did Daredevil The End.
Yeah.
It's okay, but it's more a Ben Urich story than it is a Matt Murdock story.
I love Ben Urich.
Ben Urich's a great creator, but I want a Matt story.
Yeah.
And I think Frank Miller should do it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Hey, Marvel, I know you're listening. Please make that happen.
Yeah.
Thank you. Jason will plot it. He'll co-pencil it.
Yeah, sure. I'll co-pencil.
Yeah,
wow.
You can draw. You want to draw Daredevil?
I'll draw the stick figures in the background.
Okay, cool. All right, tell me about your number five.
My number five comes from a Daredevil run that I think a lot of people forget about, but it was a great run because it happened in the middle of the 90s. And it is a run that I think sadly should be collected. It's only been collected very briefly, but a lot of people give the haha Daredevil to Mark Waid. They claim that that's a Mark Waid invention. That is incorrect. That is a Carl Kessel invention.
What a great Harley Quinn series from him as well.
Carl Kessel wrote this great story. Did this big long run of Daredevil in the 90s. But his best storyline is called The Trial of Mr. Hyde. It's in Daredevil number 354 to 357. Now, Carl Kessel's run is upbeat, but he also tells noir tales. And this is his first major storyline. Now, the interesting thing about this is that this is a storyline about Daredevil being forced into the position of defending Mr. Hyde, who is, you know, he's basically the Mr. Hyde of Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. He wears a weird cape and whatever. Now, he has to defend.
He does wear a cape. Yeah. I forgot about that.
Now, this is the whole storyline is Matt Murdock has to defend this guy.
Mm-hmm.
He knows what type of guy this is, but because of his radar sense, he knows that Mr. Hyde is actually innocent of this crime.
But Matt also has such a strong moral code that, like, if he's hired, he'll do the job.
Well, and that's the other thing about this whole storyline is that Matt has the debate. Do I let this guy go to prison because he's a scumbag? I know he's a scumbag, but he didn't commit this crime.
Can I just say it's really interesting to me that you picked this storyline because at the time of this recording, I know that you quite recently read a Batman story that deals with Mr. Freeze along similar themes
Cold
that
days.
You really enjoyed.
So it's interesting because, again, it's a do I really want to free him of the crime that I know he's gotten away with? Other crimes, the world is probably not likely to be better. Mm-hmm. Also, this whole Carl Kessel run, and this is not the entirety of the run, of course.
Yeah, yeah.
Has amazing art. Carrie Nord draws most of the storyline. Mm-hmm. Carrie Nord is about to hop onto Wonder Woman with G. Willow Wilson. He's amazing. Did a big Conan run.
Yes,
Steve Epting drew this. Sal Buscema, Matt Ryan drew this. So a lot of this is Misty Knight helping Matt Murdock with the investigation. There's a whole bunch of other stuff. There's a lot of ties into the Steve Ditko Spider-Man run. There's a continuing drama between Matt and Foggy Nelson. And this is the run that introduced a big part of the Daredevil mythos, Foggy's mother, Rosalind Sharp.
Mm-hmm.
Because this at this point in continuity, they are working for her law firm. And this, of course, is at the same time... Karen Page is a radio star, which is something that I think...
I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, yeah. In the 90s, she's a radio star, and a lot of familiar people call into the radio station.
Is she like a talk radio host?
Yeah, she's very much like Hellcat in Jessica Jones.
Oh, I love that.
Which is, I'm certain that's where they stole it.
From?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Oh, I love that.
So Carl Kessel had a brief run. He had a very limited run, but this is a classic gem run of Daredevil, and this is the best storyline from that run that a lot of people don't know about. And the sad thing about this matter is Carl Kessel's whole run is not available on Marvel Unlimited. And
really?
No.
Marvel, I know you're listening.
And it should be just because of Carrie Nord's art, and it has, I think they only have like a trade from this entire run out there. They have never collected the Carl. They need a complete Carl Kessel Daredevil.
Yeah.
But Carl Kessel is not a big name. He is to comic fans, but he's not a big name. So the trial of Mr. Hyde is my number five. And just to give you a little thing, I love this run so much back in the day. This is the run that got me into Daredevil.
Cool.
Is the Carl Kessel run.
I didn't know that.
Carl Kessel made a pitch back in the day, and he told this to Wizard Magazine back in the day. I remember reading this interview, that his ultimate goal of his run was to make Matt Murdock mayor of New York.
That would have been great.
Marvel turned him down.
That would have been great.
Here's the thing. Guess what Charles Soule just did in Daredevil?
Did he really?
Yes, he did. He made Matt Murdock the mayor of New York.
I was like, someone needs to pick that up, especially
Charles
for the current climate.
Charles
that would Soule be so topical.
Just did it.
I'm going to say that Charles Soule probably knew about that pitch.
I would hope so.
And probably took the idea from that.
I will say, very nice man, Charles Soule.
Absolutely.
Beat me to the punch, because I actually, I had that in my back pocket.
Yeah.
And,
well, you just have to make him a senator.
Well, I actually was going, this is a dream world.
Yeah.
If I ever get the chance to work on Daredevil, I am going to invite Carl Kessel to co-write an issue with me. Because
so
I get
on tweeting at Marvel, hashtag Jason for Daredevil.
I owe him... My love of Daredevil is to him.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Oh, that's really nice, Jason. That's so sweet.
Yeah, I got a little teary there.
Yeah,
so.
A little emotional.
Carl Kessel, big fan. Big fan, Carl Kessel.
Yeah.
I just actually bought his Kickstarter book. So there you go.
There you go.
Okay, there's my number five.
Cool.
What is your number four?
My number four has to do with a team up. Now, I spent a lot of time trying to pick a Spidey story for here.
Interesting.
But it's really, I love Spidey and Daredevil as a pairing. That's actually how I first came to appreciate and read more Daredevil.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think they balance each other really, really well.
And they're opposites.
However, Spidey tends to take over those stories.
Mm-hmm.
But I really wanted to include one where two characters either have to work together or at odds. And so instead I came up with an X-Men story. So my number four
is
Wolverine, Enemy of the State, Part 5, which is, first of all, please request the Wolverine stories, because that would be so much fun.
Ashley and I have talked about many times our love of Enemy of the State on this podcast.
Enemy of the State is...
I forgot
so
he was
good.
In that.
Yes, he is. So in Part 5, I'm just going to tell you what happens in this, because... The thing about Wolverine is he's a character that you just want to see everybody fight, right? Kind of like, I think people feel that way about Deadpool. So
I mean, that's the whole point of Wolverine's character, is the fight.
People. Right. So Wolverine at the time is brainwashed, and he's kind of in this berserker rage by Hydra / the government, depending on your reading of it or exactly the narrative at the time. So they send him out to kill Daredevil. And they have this amazing fight. And of course, it's Mark Miller. So like,
and John Romita Jr.
Duh, yeah. And art by John Romita Jr. And Klaus Jensen is also the secondary artist on that. Elektra shows up in it. The Hand shows up in it. The usual Daredevil suspects all kind of show up to fight Logan. And it's really like, I don't know if the narrative is much to speak of, but like, just read it for the fun. This is the equivalent of the hallway fight.
Yes.
in every season of Daredevil.
Am I remembering it wrong? Does Wolverine like sneak into Matt's apartment?
Yes.
Is that how he does it? Yeah.
And it's cool because you get to see Wolverine's, particularly his sense of scent versus the radar scent as he's kind of creeping up on Daredevil.
Yeah.
Like I said, there's maybe not a ton of story for me to sit here and describe to you other than the framing of why they come into
a fight. Yeah.
But it's just really cool. And it's... We all know Daredevil's a really skilled fighter. That's something that you brought up earlier. I don't think of him as being a vicious person. And that is driven by that morality. It's driven by that Catholic guilt. And it's interesting because... Wolverine is a friend and he's an ally, and it's interesting to see how far he pushes Matt before Matt really hits back.
Because they both are characters that deal with honor.
Yes.
They're both ninjas. Mm-hmm. Wolverine's a ninja.
Yeah, he is. It's one of his best storylines actually comes out of Japan. Please request a top five Wolverine story.
That would be interesting because I would pull some deep cuts because I'm not a huge Wolverine fan, but like I would go into the weeds on Wolverine.
Wolverine is a character when he's good, he's really good.
And when enemy, he's Ronin.
Yes, and Enemy of the State is one of the ones where he's really good. You could just pick up this whole series. This is towards the end of it, but it's very
fun. Yeah, read the whole storyline.
Yeah,
that's great.
So there
great
you go. Sorry, I didn't have a ton to say about it, but it was really fun.
I mean, it's a fight issue.
Yeah, and I wanted to include it. So tell me about your number four.
Ashley.
Yes, Jason.
When you say tell me about your number four, that should give you a key clue about...
Is it Fantastic?
Oh, yes, it is. It is Fantastic Four number 39 and 40 called... And a blind man shall lead them.
That's a great title. Nice little biblical allusion there. Yeah. Very clever.
I like to call it the battle for the Baxter Building.
I like that even better.
If you know anything about this podcast, you know that I love the first 100 issues of Fantastic Four, the Stan Lee, Jack Kirby. This is 39 to 40. This is pre-Galactus showing up. So basically the storyline of this is that the Fantastic Four have been rendered powerless by Dr. Doom.
Mm-hmm.
And, Reed Richards is working on some ways to, like, you know, bring their powers back so they can fight crime. But then Dr. Doom shows up to invade and takes over the Fantastic Four's headquarters. Luckily, the Fantastic Four's lawyer, a little gentleman by the name of Matt Murdock, was actually in the building. And so he slips away, dons his Daredevil costume, and comes back and stops the invasion of the Baxter Building. So Matt turns into Daredevil. He helps lead the fight against Doom, and he can actually stop Doom because of his radar sense. Now, there are several points during this storyline where they talk about, like, oh, man, Daredevil, you're quite skilled even though you don't have superpowers, even though I consider his radar sense to be a superpower.
You know, that's interesting, and maybe that's a debate that we'll have on a future episode, because it is one of those hotly contested topics, whereas I would agree with you. Yeah. I do think it's obviously a superpower.
It's a superpower. Like, if he was a skilled ninja just for the fact that because he lost his sight, all his other sights are better, then I would say, yeah, he doesn't have superpowers. But they invented this, like, boop, 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 you know, like he can sense people.
Yeah.
He can basically see.
Yeah.
You know, with radar. He can basically
see. Which we've seen in two different live-action Daredevil incarnations.
Yep. Yeah. Basically, this is Daredevil fighting Dr. Doom in the Baxter Building. I gotta tell you this. It's a classic Kirby story. It's written by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, with art by Jack Kirby and Frank Giacoya and Vince Coletta. I'm saying those names completely wrong. It's two-parter. In part two, basically, Daredevil does actually fist fight Dr. Doom.
Great.
And there's a classic thing Dr. Doom fight in it, so it's great. I'm pretty certain this is on Marvel Unlimited. And I really love the idea that Matt Murdock is the superhero lawyer of the Marvel Universe. Mm-hmm. It's sort of a role they've given to Jennifer Walters over the last couple, 10 years or so. But I like it better that it's Matt Murdock, that Matt Murdock is the lawyer on everybody's speed
now, dial. Is that just because you like him better than Jennifer Walters, which is no knock against her character? It's just your preference.
No, I actually think... I just think because you can tell that that's what Stan Lee wanted. And that's the reason why I think he made him a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And there's sometimes Daredevil gets shunted off into like crime and noir and Kingpin.
I'll tell you what I would like to see Jennifer Walters do, even though this is not our She-Hulk episode. We did that many years ago. I taught it. You can go check it out at geekgoeslesson.com.
Plug.
I would really love to see her take on a public defender role.
Oh, interesting.
Because that's something that's very trendy in like media right now. Mm. And to be a good public defender, you've got to be kind of hard and edgy.
Yep.
And I'd love to see her smack around a couple punk kids and teach them the right way.
It's interesting because Matt Murdock, at the time of this recording, is now a prosecutor, not a defense attorney.
Yeah.
Which is something that has twisted around. You know, I don't know. I mean, to be honest with you, why not team every lawyer up in the Marvel Universe and make them have their own firm?
Great. And Foggy's the one who's stuck being in charge because he doesn't have a superhero identity.
Yeah, it's Boston Legal for Superheroes. Let's go.
You know what? I would read that.
Yeah, well, let's go. Like, because I think there are some other lawyers in the Marvel Universe. But
I'm sure there are.
I like the idea that Matt Murdock is the secret lawyer of the DC, the Marvel Universe. And the DC Universe, yes. So I like that. So, yeah.
Dick Grayson's like, I love your I Am Not Daredevil shirt.
But yes, my number four is the And a Blind Man Shall Lead Them.
Great title.
Yeah, there you go. That's my number four.
Cool.
And it just actually coincidentally ended up as number four.
You didn't do that on purpose?
I didn't do that on purpose.
That's funny. Your intro into it was very suave. So, I enjoyed it.
Ashley, what's your number three?
My number three is another Frank Miller story. It's a little further down the line. And to be honest, I mostly picked it for Bill Sienkiewicz's art.
No problem with that.
It is called Daredevil Love and War. That's the collection that you can find it. It's part of from 1986. This is the story of, if you're a fan of the Daredevil television show and the Wilson Fisk Vanessa relationship, then I would really recommend picking up this story. It deals with Vanessa coming to terms with who, I almost said Vincent D'Onofrio, with who Wilson
Well,
Fisk.
Vincent D'Onofrio would have been around at the time, so she
really
could be
is.
Coming to terms
you know
with
what?
Vincent D'Onofrio.
I'm sure he's a lovely human. But she's coming to terms with who Wilson Fisk really is, what he does, and whether or not she can live with that. So she kind of wants him to step away from that. He wants to keep a hold on her, so he's trying to keep his criminal enterprises secret, but he's fighting with this brain surgeon at the time, so he kidnaps his wife, and he's trying to hide it from Vanessa, and Daredevil has to come up and save the day. There's also a character who is the POV character for a lot of this, who is a drug addict / murderer / autistic person, and I think they use that as the excuse to have Bill Sienkiewicz do some of his most fantastical arting in this book, because you kind of see it through his lens and his feelings. A lot of the material, when you go to look at this online, describes it as having a dreamlike quality. I would agree with
that.
A lot
of Bill Sienkiewicz's art, I would describe as that.
I would say this is maybe the closest to something like Arkham Asylum that you can get from a Daredevil story.
Yeah.
I also am a huge fan of the Wilson Fisk Vanessa relationship, so I liked going back and seeing how it begins being seeded here and how that influenced the television show.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes, you can.
Would you prefer Vanessa's alive or dead? Because I will tell you, there are several Daredevil storylines where we deal with her death, and then she comes back, and then she dies, and then she comes back.
And her death often...
same with the Kingpin, but yeah, Vanessa
often informs why Wilson Fisk is the way he is.
Do you want Vanessa alive, or do you want Vanessa... In your perfect Daredevil story.
In my perfect Daredevil story, she's alive,
okay. And
I do like it the way they've done it on the show, where she sort of... not reluctantly, but she comes around to his side. Like, I think that's very interesting. And I think it's interesting that she can ground him in that way, because at least the way it's portrayed in a more modern sense, like, I think she's smarter than him.
She is smarter than him.
And I think that's very fascinating. So Daredevil, Love and War. It's beautiful and soft aesthetically. It's not as emotionally beautiful. It's funny, both of the Frank Miller stories I picked are like Frank Miller versions of love stories.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as soft and wonderful and feeling inducing as What If Elektra Had Lived, but it's a really fascinating examination of the Kingpin. And I think it's one of the first times, I think maybe beginning in the 80s is generally when this was happening in comics, when we got a chance to actually look at the Kingpin as a person, as opposed to just like, I'm a giant comic book villain rubbing my hands in the shadows.
Bring me that insect Spider-Man.
Yeah, like you see him crushing Spider-Man.
Trying to do the 1960s Kingpin voice.
Spider-Man's skull. and I that's something that even though I often have a hard time enjoying a story that's driven by a villain, I think when it is well done, it is very fascinating. And the impact of this particular storyline, I mean, the reason that I've mentioned the television show several times in talking about it, you can feel it ripple through Daredevil's history. So I think it's very important as well. And I don't think there's enough people appreciating Bill Sienkiewicz art out in the world. So please go check it out.
That's correct.
Also follow him on Twitter. He's fun.
Cool.
So there you go. Daredevil Love and War. So Jason, what is your number three?
Yes. My number three is called The Murdoch Papers.
Oh, I like that.
Daredevil Volume 2, number 76 to 81. The Murdoch Papers is the final storyline in Brian Michael Bendis's very long Daredevil run. It's one of the best Daredevil runs of all time. And basically, the beginning of Brian Michael Bendis's Daredevil run, he has a crook expose Matt Murdock's identity to the whole world.
Mm-hmm.
And the majority of Matt Murdock's storyline through Brian Michael Bendis's run is people being like, "You're Daredevil," and him being like, "No, I'm not." And they're, "You're Daredevil." He's like, "No, I'm not." It's never confirmed. Well, the Murdoch Papers is all about the Kingpin shows up to the FBI and says, "In exchange for immunity, I will deliver proof positive evidence papers that say Matt Murdock is Daredevil," hence the title, The Murdoch Papers. So the FBI apparently has not been able to prove it this entire run. So they're going to take the deal. And this leads to Daredevil on a chase with his allies, Elektra and Black Widow, trying to beat the FBI to whatever.
With his two ex-girlfriends,
trying to beat the FBI in a race to solve these papers, to stop these papers. And of course, it comes on this several things because Elektra believes, like, just let it go. Who cares? Be Daredevil the whole time. And Black Widow's like, no, you need your identity. And then there's the Kingpin playing this whole kind of game. It's a brilliant wrap up to this entire run, and it's really good. And also, this is the storyline. I'm going to spoil the ending for it. This is the Daredevil storyline that started this recent trend that Daredevil writers have said or done. It's sort of become this thing for Daredevil writers to leave a cliffhanger at the end of their run that the other writers have to solve. And generally, most of them have done it. Like, Mark Waid didn't really do it, and Andy Diggle didn't really do it.
What did Brian Michael Bendis do at the end of his run?
So, Brian Michael Bendis' cliffhanger is probably the ultimate. This is probably one of the best Daredevil cliffhangers of all time. Matt fails. Matt does not get the Murdoch papers. He is arrested, and he is taken to prison. That is the last page of Brian Michael Bendis's run, which leads into the brilliant Ed Brubaker run, of course, but which I said to fact, no Ed Brubaker Daredevil story made it on my list.
Me either, unfortunately.
And I like that run a lot. But the last page is, Daredevil goes to prison.
Cool.
Which is a hell of a cliffhanger. And I don't know, if I'm the next writer coming in, I might be like, damn it.
Yeah.
Come on, man. So the Murdoch Papers is a really good run. And hopefully if you, I hope you read the rest of the run.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't want to suggest the whole like 60 issues. I just wanted to give you, you know, just the what I think is the best storyline of the whole run. So there you go. That is my number three.
Cool. Number three.
What's your number two?
My number two is the most modern of my choices. It is an Eisner winning run. It is Daredevil by Mark Waid.
The entirety of the run?
I'm specifically recommending volume one, and then I'm mostly going to talk about issue number seven, which is the one that won the Eisner.
Okay.
I just want to point out, though, when I do
Chris
these...
Chris Samney.
Yes. Is it Samney or Somney?
Somney.
Chris Insomnia.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to Amazon and you are looking for Daredevil Volume 1 by Mark Waid, the description, whoever wrote this description, really wild. It says, Mark Waid joins neo-legendary artists Paulo Rivera and Marcos Martin for a new spin on Daredevil that will leave you gasping for air. Like, slow your roll.
Oh, Marcos Martin was the first art. But yeah, somebody really loves Marcos Martin over there.
It's a really good description.
Maybe Marcos Martin wrote it.
It's a really
Marcos,
good...
Hey, Marcos, we know you listen. Do you write Amazon descriptions now?
Your work on Private Eye was really cool.
Hey, it's really great. He has some Doctor Strange the Oath is amazing.
Yeah. I just thought that was really funny, and I had to read it because we have our recommended reading page. We have the Amazon links open, and I just thought that was super, super hilarious. Jason alluded to it earlier. People think of this as sort of the happy Daredevil.
Well, Daredevil's always been described as a swashbuckler.
Yes, and this is truly swashbuckling.
And Mark Waid said in many interviews when he took this run that he was like, I'm going to bring the swashbuckler back. But Carl Kessel then at first. Stan Lee did a little bit, too.
Yes. Another way that I've seen this described is that he's grinning in the face of hell, which I think is kind of a cute idea. The fights throughout this are fun because the Billy Club really gets a lot of interesting play in a way that it hadn't been used before. I think that comes out of the idea
also, he's in San Fran, which is so cool.
Of the swashbuckler.
Yeah.
Yep. Foggy is a really, really big part of this book. The public identity of Daredevil is a really big part of this book, because Daredevil by Mark Waid began with Marvel Now.
I think
or in Marvel Now, like right in that sort of first couple years, that first wave of it. So Mark Waid was able to visit a lot of, even though it was in San Fran, a lot of familiar trappings, a lot of familiar characters, a lot of usual suspects, but for this soft new continuity.
But the interesting thing, too, is that this is comes post my number three.
Yes, it does.
So everybody in the world knows Matt Murdock is Daredevil.
Yes. But for part of it, he's like, no, I'm not.
Yeah, yeah.
like, there is a good amount of denial in it. And then we put it back in the box, of course, because this is comics.
Yeah.
But what I think is interesting is that I remember when Daredevil number 7 won the Eisner.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed like a very big deal at the time.
Can I make a guess?
Please.
Is this the issue where he leads the blind kids
in
the snow?
In the snow,
okay,
yes.
Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So to tell you sort of a truncated version of what happens, school bus crashes with a bunch of blind children on it. Daredevil, let's just say that he appears, and he has to save them. But in the end, he collapses because he's probably wearing spandex, and they wind up saving him. Mm-hmm. It's a very sweet story. I'm going to say it's a very un-Daredevil story. And maybe that's why people think it's weird that it won, or it's interesting. And
I think it's weird that it won.
Do you think there are better, more deserving Daredevil stories?
Well,
not to criticize.
No.
Disgusting.
I think it's a great, great story. Mm-hmm. And I see why it won the Eisner. It doesn't feel like a Daredevil story to me.
I would agree.
And I love
none of the usual trappings.
And I love Mark Waid. Mm-hmm. And I think his writing is fantastic. And that's why I say this with all respect. A blind man leading a bus of blind children seems a little cliche to me. It just on
yeah,
the surface.
That's fair.
I mean,
yeah,
again,
yeah, yeah. It's a great story.
The story is great. And I totally understand why it won the Eisner. Would I have ever nominated it? No.
Okay, that's fair.
That's what I'm saying.
That's totally fair, and you can still enjoy
it. And Mark Waid is more successful and more famous than me.
So I guess he's
right. So you win, Mark.
Yeah, but that's but that's fine. Like, you can still hold that point of view. The last thing I want to mention about it is we've mentioned a bunch of the artists that have worked on it. Mark Waid's run had some of the most phenomenal artists working on it.
It's a great run. Mark's run is amazing.
And it has covers by Mike and Laura Allred that are stunning.
Mike did a whole issue, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If you do pick up the omnibus that's out of it, it's got a Allred's cover, which is really, really gorgeous. Also, this is the run credited with first showing us the 360-degree version of the radar sense and sort of, quote, reinventing the way we saw the radar sense.
All right, I guess. I've read this run several times, and I own it, and I don't know if I would have ever credited it, but sure.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair. I don't know if it's the first time it was seen or maybe the first time in the modern era that this was seen. But a lot of people like to point to this as being a really inventive new way to show the way the radar sense works.
Well, the reason why a lot of people give this run a lot of credit is because Daredevil post Frank Miller is kind of like Batman. Every creator post Frank Miller
is chasing Frank Miller.
Is chasing Frank Miller, but also try to make it like darker. So much guilt, sin. I'm Matt Murdock. What do I do? Like, it becomes more and more. And I remember Mark Waid said in an interview once where he said, "How can I go darker? I can't go darker." And when you think about it, Ed Brubaker make him darker. Andy Diggle to out top Ed Brubaker had Daredevil become a demon.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, you can't get much darker than going demon. So I understand, like, making the shift and being like, let's go happy because we haven't seen happy. I will say this, and I, of course, also forgot that Mark Waid has been a guest of our podcast. Mark Waid's first volume, this volume that you're suggesting, is one of the best books to hand somebody that has never read Daredevil before.
I, in fact, earlier this year gave it to somebody as hey, you like Daredevil? You should read that. All you have to know is that the identity is public.
It's a fantastic jumping on point.
So there you go. I think it's great. And it's also the first volume of Daredevil that I ever read.
Is it really?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Like a whole volume of just Daredevil stories. So,
nice.
Fun fact. Jason, what is your number two?
My number two is a Mark Waid story.
Hey, look at that.
But it is the best Mark Waid story.
Does it have blind children in the snow?
No, it does not. It is a storyline called Ikari. And it is Daredevil Volume 3, number 23 to 27. This is,
I'm just going to put the omnibus on our recommended reading then.
I have the specific trade for this one.
Okay.
You know, for our listeners that don't have the money to shell out this giant omnibus. So this is the finale of his 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And basically throughout all of Mark Waid's run, you know, as you know, there is a mysterious bad guy. We don't know who the bad guy is. Mm-hmm. And eventually it's revealed that it is Bullseye.
Yes.
And the cool thing about this storyline is that Bullseye has hired this guy named Ikari, who has Daredevil's radar sets.
Dun, dun, dun. It's actually really cool. I can't believe someone didn't do it before.
Yep. And he's dressed in a sort of ninja version of Daredevil's yellow and red original costume, which is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a great, great scene where Ikari just keeps kicking Daredevil's ass. Like, Matt cannot beat him. And Matt can't figure out why he can't beat him and do this stuff like that. And then that's eventually where it leads to revelation, like, oh, he has a radar sense. That's the reason why I can't beat him. So Matt is like, oh, he's just like me. He's a blind guy. He's a ninja. He has a radar sense. What's the one thing that can beat me? A sprinkler system.
The death of Elektra. Oh,
that's, so, yeah. It's just like the snowstorm. It's the reason why the snowstorm issue, like,
because it makes him blind because he can see all the snowflakes.
He's static. He's ecstatic. So he goes.
Static. That's a much better description than what I said.
He goes into this sporting goods store, and he sets off the sprinkler system, and he's like, I have to just trust that he's as blind as I am right now.
Mm-hmm.
But he's like, I know he's coming down this. I know he's there. So Matt, assuming that he's blind, he's hiding behind a pillar, reaches out to grab a red baseball bat. Or a blue one or something. I can't. It's a color joke. I can't remember exactly.
Yeah.
But he goes out to reach it, and Ikari goes, "Grab the red one."
Oh yeah.
And so Matt's like, "Oh crap, he's not blind.
Yeah,
that's the reason why he's been able to beat me, because he has one more sense
than I do
that I don't have." And that moment is amazing. Ikari is an amazing villain. He's an amazing addition. I'm always impressed when a writer, especially in modern times, can create a villain that I think stands equal to some of these characters' original villains.
Like Bullseye.
Like Bullseye. Like, oh, well, Bullseye's a later invention, actually. But I'm talking about, like...
But I mean, when you think of Daredevil's mm-hmm. rogues gallery, Bullseye definitely comes to
mind. Sure. And like, Kingpin is a big one, mm-hmm. but Kingpin's a dick coker. Most of the Marvel characters, I think, like, their best villains all come from the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
So that when you can, like, make a villain that matches that and feels iconic like that, I think that is an impressive thing.
Would you like to see, if we got a new season of Daredevil, would you like to see Ikari featured in it?
I mean, I'll be honest with you, we have not finished Daredevil season 3 mm-hmm. at this time, so Ikari could show up for all I know, and I wouldn't know, because I've been staying, like, spoiler free because I want to enjoy that series as much as I love it. Daredevil's my Red's my boy. Hashtag Red's my boy.
Everyone's gonna think you're talking about Hellboy.
I don't care. You know, I want to stay. So Ikari could show up in that show for all I know. He could be in episode 13 for all I know. Do not tweet me spoilers. I will block you immediately. I block for spoilers. that's the thing I block for. Anyways, it's a great culmination of the run. I know it's problematic that I picked the ending of two great runs.
It's fine. Also, because I picked the beginning of this run. So hopefully you guys will be in and you'll read the whole thing.
But Somni's art is amazing. Mark Waid is and Ikari is fantastic. To me, I would have given Mark Waid the Eisner for the bat moment.
Interesting.
Like, I'd have been like, that's genius.
I'm gonna say one more thing about the Eisner for issue 7. To me, you can look at that issue and understand why it won the Eisner in the same way that you can understand why movies win Oscars.
Well, it's a standalone,
it's
too.
It's Eisner Beatty.
Oh, yes.
Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
And again, Mark Waid has more Eisners than we are. He has clearly won.
It's a truly great issue. We're not criticizing the issue. We're just having a discussion.
And dear friend Mark, who is not our dear friend, but we
acquaintance Mark,
who has been on this podcast before.
Yeah.
We hope you don't take offense.
No.
I don't know why we're very worried about how Mark Waid's going to be offended by this.
Because clearly we respect him a lot.
He's great. I mean, we'll be lucky if we have the career that Mark Waid has.
Yeah, truly.
So there you go.
Maybe it's because he's got red hair like Matt, so he has extra clout.
Nah, I don't know. There you go. All right, Ashley, we are here.
Yes.
The time has come for the final number. Number one. What do you consider to be the best?
This is my favorite. This is not
Daredevil,
the best.
But it's best to you.
Yes.
What do you think is the best Daredevil
story? I'm
like
99% sure that you could guess this if you had a billy club to your head.
Okay.
My number one is by my all-time favorite comics creative team, Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale.
I wondered. Daredevil Yellow.
Yeah, of course, Daredevil Yellow. It's part of their Marvel Color series, along with Spider-Man Blue and the other two titles that we don't talk about.
Spoilers, Daredevil Yellow, not on my list.
You know what? I'm not surprised by that.
It's fine.
I really enjoy it. I also think it's a good... I think it's a good introduction to the character because it is a year one style story. It reintroduces you to all of the classic trappings of Daredevil.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Do you like the Daredevil yellow costume?
No, I hate it.
I love it.
I hate it. The yellow looks stupid.
Ashley knows this because there is a Walgreens.
Why don't you call it Daredevil red?
There's a Walgreens exclusive figure where he's in the yellow costume, and there's been many times where I've debated by it.
If someone wants to send it, Jawin, P.O. Box 16429 in Encino, California, 91416. Thank you.
Did you just give our P.O. box out?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, then. I don't even know it off the top of my head.
Thank you.
Okay. It's like you have a radar sense for numbers.
There you go.
So Daryl, so you don't like the, yeah, but why do you love this story so much?
Okay, I like the yellow suit only for this story.
Sure.
Because yellow is a color that deals with cowardice and
it was his dad's colors though.
It was his dad's colors, but this is Matt learning how to not be afraid because like Spider-Man Blue, this is an emotionally driven story and a lot of it has to do kind of like in Spider-Man Blue, Peter is talking to Gwen. Matt is talking to Karen Page, who has recently died, and he kind of recounts
which happened in the Kevin Smith Guardian Devil storyline.
There you go. So tweet Kevin Smith about that. Mm-hmm. He goes through his childhood. He tells you about how he became blind, looking up to his father, who was a boxer,
yep.
not a good one, intentionally or unintentionally, and how his grief at the death of his father shaped him not only as a man but as a hero. And when you see him adopt his first Daredevil costume, instead of that sort of ninja trapping, it is based on his father's boxing colors. And I like that. I like the way it deals with him becoming brave. I think that's interesting because I think that that's something that we often lose along the way when we write about superheroes, is that even though it's a completely insane thing to do and no one should do it in real life, to put yourself out there in that way, it's kind of like being, in my opinion, for the rules of that universe, it's like being a soldier or a service member. You have to be incredibly brave to do that. And Daredevil is a character who we don't often look at. We examine his foibles through the lens of Catholicism, but we don't ever think of Matt being that scared little boy. And a lot of this deals with that.
Yeah.
And also, Karen's got yellow hair, kind of like Gwen Stacy does in this issue. So I think the dueling, I like the yellow theme. Tim Sale's art is just my favorite art in the universe.
Yeah, it's great. He has one female face, though. So does Karen look exactly like Gwen?
But you know who else has one female face? Jack Kirby.
Sure.
So
and he also has one male face, too.
He's got like three male faces,
yeah.
But one of them is the Hulk.
Yeah.
so I just think, I think Daredevil Yellow is really singular. I think it's really special. And I think it stands on its own. And if you like it, you're going to like other Daredevil things. And there's pretty much no way going into this I was not going to put it as my number one. Maybe that's predictable. And if that bothers you, I don't care.
Well, no, it's not predictable. It's fine. You love Tim Sale, and that's
love.
I considered putting it on my list.
And he was lovely.
But yeah, he was lovely. I considered putting this on my list.
And, I knew you wouldn't.
And then I said no.
Yeah.
There's actually one, and we'll talk about it in our Patreon episode on patreon.com/Jawin. Our Geek Castro's an extra this week, our extra podcast, will be honorable mentions or like
yeah.
I have a big list of Daredevil storylines and I'm going to ask your opinion on them, but
cool.
I'm going to reveal the storyline that I almost gave a tie to five.
Okay.
Because I felt that this storyline should be on there, but I eventually knocked it out.
That's totally fair. I don't know if it has necessarily anything new to say about Daredevil.
Yep.
But I think the retelling of the classic tropes is good.
Yep.
Tell me what's your number one as our resident Daredevil expert.
My number one is the end-all, be-all Daredevil storyline. It is the storyline that when you ask people what is the greatest Daredevil storyline of all time, this is the most common answer. And rightfully so, because it comes from the greatest Daredevil writer during the greatest run. And it is the Daredevil run that everybody was like, when is the show gonna do this?
Mm.
It is Born Again.
Dun, dun, dun.
Daredevil number 227 to 233. It is the greatest Daredevil storyline of all time. I am not the only person to say that. Look, Frank Miller reshaped Daredevil, just like he reshaped Batman and like he reshaped many other characters. And this is the storyline when people think of the classic Daredevil storyline. This is the storyline they think of. It's absolutely this storyline. It is so well known that it's almost cliche now. Like, so mm-hmm. many other characters have stolen from mm-hmm. this storyline. So this storyline, Miller was working with David Mazzucchelli, who mm-hmm. is also the guy who drew Batman Year One. And also his editor on the series was Denny O'Neill.
So some
heavyweights made this storyline. So this is the storyline that when Matt Murdock's former secretary, Karen Page, his former love of the life, who had left the series to become an actress, is now a drug addicted porn star and desperate for drugs. She sells Matt Murdock's secret identity to this drug dealer. And eventually it finds its way to Wilson Fisk, and the Kingpin uses this information to destroy every aspect of his life. He gets him disbarred.
Mm-hmm.
He freezes his bank assets. And then eventually, in one of the best Daredevil cliffhangers of all time, he blows up Matt's brownstone home. Blows it up right in front of him.
Very iconic panel. You've probably seen it before.
Yeah, and it's the cliffhanger of the issue because Matt is looking at the building. And it's at this moment up in the storyline that Matt didn't know who was screwing with him.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually when the building blew up, there's this kind of inner monologue thing where Matt is like, oh, you signed your handiwork, Fisk. I know who it is.
I'm going to be honest. Of course there's an inner monologue. It's Frank Miller.
Yep, it's Frank Miller.
That's one of his good tricks.
So Matt has lost everything. He lost the woman he loved. He's lost his law.
Mm-hmm.
He lost his building. He's lost his money. He's lost everything he's owned. So he basically has to be born again. So Kingpin soon encounters a Daredevil that is meaner, more ruthless, and stops at nothing to beat him. And there's another iconic scene where the Kingpin is working out.
Oh, yes. At a gym machine. The television show has lifted.
Yes. And he realizes in her monologue, he's like, oh, what's the deal? Like, Daredevil's never acted like this way before. And he realizes that by taking everything away from Matt Murdock, Kingpin says, I have truly created a man without fear.
Dun, dun, dun. Hashtag bear without fear.
Yes. So it is these two epic titans perfectly. Literally, Frank Miller took every analogy, every metaphor of Daredevil and basically cranked it up to 11
mm-hmm.
and made the story. Also in the storyline, Ben Urich has a tremendous arc in this
thing. Ben Urich.
Because he knows that something is up and he is brutalized by Kingpin's henchmen. They try to beat him up to find out who Daredevil is, and he will not reveal who Daredevil is, even though he knows that Matt Murdock is Daredevil. But there's a great Ben bravery scene. I will not give it away, but there's a reason why everybody talks about this storyline. There's a reason why, season 3 of Daredevil Netflix is basically kind of doing Born Again,
mm-hmm.
An aspect of it, like a twist of it. And this is the Daredevil storyline. Like, everybody thinks about this, creating the man without fear. And the Kingpin knowing Matt Murdock's identity comes from this storyline. It is kind of we kind of just assume it in the comic books. And Brian Michael Bendis, like, his earlier storyline, Underboss, is a direct result of this storyline.
Yeah.
So, to me, when you're talking about the best Daredevil storylines of all time, you have to
include the one that everyone copies.
Yes, you have to include the one that everyone copies.
Mm-hmm.
So, that is why this is Born Again, my number one.
That is a great choice. And of course, people can find these and all of our recommended reading over at geekhistorylesson.com/recommended reading.
Well, before
I had a brain fart.
Before we get into that, real quick, we have to talk about our next sponsor. Our next sponsor is Lisa. And Lisa asks, do you find yourself distracted, forgetting things, making mistakes at work? A quality night's sleep makes all the difference. Or a quality night's dream,
ooh,
as our next Geek History Lesson guest, Dr. Strange, would say. Isn't that correct, Doctor? Yes. Hello, Dr. Strange is here. When you are sleeping into dreamland, the right mattress is the difference between resting and just laying down. The Lisa mattress, Lisa, by the way, is the name of one of my ex-girlfriends from the Dark Dimension. But I know this mattress is not from the Dark Dimension. It is a product of more than 30 years of experience in mattress and engineering and hundreds of hours of testing. It's comprised of over 3 foam layers that provide cool pressure relief, body contouring like my cape, and support. You may order your Lisa mattress online at... This is not the link to my call-in radio show. This is a link to you. Oh, very well. I will read it. You are signing the checks. Order your Lisa mattress online at lisa.com/geekhistory with promo code GEEKHISTORY and try it risk-free for 100 nights. One time I fought Dormammu for 100 nights, and I will tell you that it was definitely not as comfortable as this mattress is going to be. It ships directly to your door in a convenient box with free shipping and free returns. Also, the demons of Ashanti will come conveniently to your door as well. Watch out for them. You can get up to $160 off the Lisa mattress or $230 off the luxury Sapira mattress and free shipping on the Lisa mattress at lisa.com/geekhistory and enter promo code GEEKHISTORY at checkout. Thank you very much. This has been Doctor Strange, and I will see you in Dreamland.
And Clea.
Clear, go away.
Stevie, what kind of bed do you have?
You know what kind of bed I have.
A Lisa mattress.
Yes. Named for my ex-girlfriend that we do not talk about. Clear, you know about that. You know about her, correct?
I don't know, Stevie. I think you should tell me
again. She was the girlfriend that was consumed by the dark magic!
But you love me more, right?
We'll talk about it later. Click. All right. Small little guest appearance there by Dr. Strange. Yes, our recommended reading here is going to be the top 3 of both of our lists. You can buy there if any of those stories interest you and do that stuff like that.
Please let us know, too, especially when we do these top 5s, if you do go and check out any of our recommendations, because it's fun for us to know.
Oh, yeah. If you pick up some of our recommended reading, you're not only supporting the show, but tweet us. Mm-hmm. Tweet us and be like, I just got my copy of Born Again.
And let us know what you think.
And this was terrible. Or pick up that Mark Waid storyline and be like, I don't know if this should have won the Eisner.
Mark Waid's going to be so mad at you.
Oh, man, I hope not.
I'm just kidding.
So let's go to the last section of our podcast, the honor roll, where if you go over to iTunes or /Apple Podcast/ whatever they're calling it now, and you leave us a 5-star review on this podcast, not only do you help this podcast get into the search algorithms, but we're going to read your review out loud. Ashley, who left us a 5-star review and insulted us? Anybody?
Our first amazing student joining the honor roll is NES Tecmo, who says, great podcast. Subscribe now. I was at a snazzy cocktail party when a buddy of mine told me about this podcast.
Ooh.
And I have been playing it ever since. I have told multiple people about it. It was what I listened to on my commute home from work. I even enjoy it with my son, just parked after watching the movie of that episode. I'm a huge unabashed Marvel fan, and what I did was go a la carte with the episodes with relevant or interesting titles. But when I was done, I ended up listening to them all. Haha. I love their theme song, and the podcast structure should also be commended. 1,000 thanks from a fellow illegitimate skunk bear, NES Tecmo.
This is, of course, our joke, of course, to the Wolverine episode of all his illegitimate children,
also,
the illegitimate skunk bears.
I think it's amazing that you listen with your son. Thank
yeah, that's
you.
Cool. I want to know what his favorite episodes are.
Please follow up and let us know on Twitter at GHL Podcast.
Who else is joining the honor roll?
Also joining is Bama Shocks. Pretty sure I nailed that.
It's for Alabama.
I am not American.
That's a sports reference.
Who says 2 thumbs up with no less than 3 exclamation points. This is absolutely one of my favorite podcasts of all time.
Thank you.
They spend around an hour giving us all the juicy tidbits of one team, character, or construct from comics in an easy to understand and friendly manner. Thank you. I want to put that on a business card.
Is the business card something you said, or did they say that?
No, that's what I said.
Oh, okay.
I said thank you very much.
I was like, is that part of the review?
So, Bama Shocks and NES Tecmo, welcome to the Teacher's Lounge.
Yes,
Jason will tell you which food item you cannot touch in the fridge.
You cannot touch the rice pudding. That belongs to Mr. Schrader.
What does Mr. Schrader teach again?
Firearm safety.
Jesus.
Look, we're an American school.
Very important when talking about blind characters. Jesus.
All right. Don't forget, guys, you can subscribe and listen to this podcast on Stitcher, Spotify, all the places you listen to podcasts. You can follow me on Twitter at Jawin, J-A-W-I-I-N. Follow Ashley on Twitter at Ashley V. Robinson. And follow the podcast on Twitter at GHL Podcast. Don't forget our Patreon, patreon.com/Jawin, J-A-W-I-I-N, is where you can listen to all our extra podcasts. We do movie commentaries. We just did Justice League, The Flashpoint Paradox. And you can listen to our Geekish Lesson Extra, which is 10 more minutes on Daredevil stories that almost made this list but didn't. Ashley, the last section of the podcast, hashtag stick around, where we force people to listen through our plugs for a little bit more conversation. What'd you learn about Daredevil, or any stories that surprised you from my list or your list? Just Daredevil surprises. Let's call that.
I learned that not all Frank Miller stories are angry stories.
That's true.
And I was pleasantly surprised by that, because when you do often consult lists like these, there's a lot of Frank Miller Daredevil recommendations. And then I actually thought your Mr. Hyde recommendation was really interesting. And I
Carl Kessel runs so good.
I think I'm going to go read that.
So good. I don't know if it's on Marvel Unlimited.
Well, you know what? I guess I'll find it somewhere else.
Some of his run is on Marvel Unlimited, but it's not complete. Like, it's like random issues, like a little skip, like three or four or whatever. I think he only did like...
I don't understand why Marvel does that. You have the whole damn catalog, just digitize it.
I think he only did like a year or 2 years. Like, he didn't do a long run. But yeah. Like, it was such a good run that I was like, ah, oh, man.
But you know what? By modern standards, that's a pretty long run.
That's true. That's very true.
We're a little, with the exception of some people, we're a little past the 5-10 year run on a character. I feel like people are lucky to get more than 12 issues sometimes.
I agree. I actually think... I
think that's good and bad.
Yeah. We are in a weird world of comic books where you're lucky to get 12 issues.
I mean, unless you're writing Batman or Spider-Man.
Yeah. And it's hard now, because I do think that's a missing fact, where it's hard for writers now to do these long setups to where you can like set something in like your issue 5 and then pay it off in like issue 80.
Yeah, unless you're Dan Slott or Tom King or Scott Snyder.
It's hardly it's rare. I mean, even Tom King's 100 issue run, his 100 issue run is going to beat Scott Snyder's, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, the double shipping helps as well.
Sure, sure. That does help. But it's interesting. It is. Yeah, you are correct. I don't know. Like, I do think that does detract.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess it's just part of the market now, where you think about Daredevil is one of the exceptions, because you think about it, like Mark Waid got a 2 year run.
Yeah.
Charles Soule's been going for about like 2 to 3 years now on Daredevil.
I think Charles Soule... Yeah, outstrips Mark Waid.
I think so. I think so.
He's had a longer run.
I think he's had a little bit of longer run. Ed Brubaker had like a 2 year, 3 year run. Mm-hmm. Brian Michael Bendis had like a 5 year run.
Is there someone that you would really like to see take on Daredevil?
Ooh,
besides yourself, of course.
Ooh,
it's okay if you don't know off the top of your head.
I don't know, because I've been surprised by Daredevil. Mm-hmm. Like, I would have never told you in a million years that Mark Waid.
I would agree with that.
Mark Waid was a weird choice. Mm-hmm. I thought he was a weird choice for Daredevil.
Must have had a good pitch.
but no, it just goes to show me that Mark Waid can write anything. Mark Waid has written so many characters that I to be honest with you, at this point, I'd love to see Mark Waid do an Aquaman run, because
I'd be down for that.
I think it's such a weird character, and I think he could knock it out of the park.
He wrote good Aquaman in his JLA Justice League stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So. That's why I think I'd be interested to just give him full, like, go crazy. Like, I mean, my obvious answer would be, say, Jeff Lemire.
Sure.
Just because I think Jeff Lemire is a great writer.
Great.
That's
a perfectly fine reason to pick someone.
I don't know. I always think, like, somebody that does crime should do a great run. Ed Brubaker's already done his great run. So, you know what? To be honest with you, let's give it to his Gotham Central partner, Greg Rucka.
Love it.
Let's give Greg Rucka a run on Daredevil.
As drawn by Nicholas Scott.
Oh, hell yeah. Let's do that. Or Michael Lark.
Great.
Who is doing
both of his comic contributors.
Actually, I think Michael Lark drew a lot of Ed Brubaker's
Did
run.
He?
Yeah, because
people can listen to me type it, like, quickly Google.
Because remember, Ed Brubaker and Greg Rucka teamed up on Gotham Central, and Brubaker got Daredevil right after Gotham Central. So
yeah, he drew some Daredevil.
Yep.
According to Wikipedia.
I think he brought Michael Lark with him. So yeah. And the reason I say Michael Lark is because Greg
Daredevil Volume 2
Yep.
Sorry, guys. That's number it. 82 to 105.
Yep.
All the way up to 119 and then five. So from 2006 to 2009, he drew a bunch of Daredevil.
Ed Brubaker.
You're right.
So let's make it.
And he did some of the Pulse as well. Yep. He did What If Karen Page Had Lived.
Let's make Greg Rucka and Nicola Scott the artists on Daredevil. Let's do that.
Cool.
Yeah.
She draws very beautiful men.
I don't know. Is there any writer you think would do a kick-ass Daredevil run?
I mean, I think pulling Greg Rucka is a really, really great choice.
I just think somebody with a crime background should do it.
Yeah, I see why you're leaning that way. I mean, I do think Tom King and Mitch Gerads could probably take on any character and do a really, really great job. I'd have to sit. I would love to see Tomasi and Gleason.
Ooh.
Because they.
Oh, man.
When
Patrick would draw an amazing Daredevil.
Amazing radar sense. And when they come into a character and when they're given time, they really expand and explode the world in an interesting way. So that's, I think they'd be great.
Yep, you are correct. Their long run on Superman was great. Their long run on Batman and Robin was great.
Yeah.
And Tomasi is getting ready to do a super deep detective-y Batman run.
Can't wait.
So he already has the crime background and he lives in New York. He loves New York. If you go read his book, The Bridge, his independent graphic novel, it's great. Yeah, that would be a great, that would be a good Daredevil. That'd be a really good Daredevil. I was trying to think about a lady.
Well, we got Nicola in there at least.
No, I mean like a lady writer. But I can't think of one. I can't think of one that I think would knock Daredevil out of the park.
The Benson sisters come to mind for me because they did a lot of crimey detective stuff in their Birds of Prey.
Sure.
And they are more dialogue heavy writers.
Sure.
So for the lawyering, I think that would be good.
Okay, cool. I think that's good choices right there. You know, we're a little bit into the weeds.
Yeah, that's fine.
And don't forget hashtag Rid's my boy. And also, you know, should Microwave have got that Eisner? I think so. Maybe. I don't know. For Geek History Lesson, I am Jason Bear Without Fear in
me. I am Ashley Victoria Robinson, and Professor Jason, will you please dismiss the Daredevils?
Excuse me, I'm still trapped in your studio and I cannot find the door. If only I had a radar sense!